And her presentation is titled Low Prospects and High Risk, Structural Determinants of Health Associated with Sexual Risk Among Young African American Women Residing in Resource Poor Communities in the South.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have a packed house. Guess the word got out that I'm famous and you all want to see me. I digress. I apologize for the very long title, but I will be focusing this talk on structural determinants of health. So the topic of this particular panel of presentations is just context matter, and I would definitely say a resounding yes. And so I'll be focusing on structural determinants of health that may explain high-risk sexual behavior among young African-American adolescent young girls. Okay? So I'd like to just, for a moment, acknowledge my co-authors, including the principal investigator of this CDC cooperative agreement, Dr. Wendy Wexberg. So, and then this is a quote from an inner city youth, their attitude towards the future, which I think does frame this talk a little bit, and I'll refer to it a little bit later. So as we know, the disproportionate rate of HIV and other STDs is a public health concern among African American women. CDC has found that high-risk sex is more prevalent among African Americans when compared to other racial and ethnic groups. However, there are other factors that may explain this high-risk sexual behavior beyond individual risk behaviors. For example, among low-income African American youth, high-risk sex may reflect attempts to survive depressed economic conditions. Young women in low-resource communities may feel hopeless and therefore engage in risky behaviors as a way to cope with this low future expectation given these adverse conditions. So another term to describe those factors is structural determinants of health, which may be implicated in sexual risk disparities. So structural determinants of health, and in particular for this talk, sexual health, is defined as any physical, social, cultural, organizational, community, economic, legal, or policy aspect of the environment that impedes or facilitates the efforts to avoid disease transmission. So it's possible that high-risk sex may result from hopelessness or depressed future outlook among poor youth. For example, poverty and violence is seen as a way of inhibiting long-term planning and aspirations by impairing youth's sense of security, safety, and hope. It's been found that depressed future outlook, defined as perceived limited expectations for future advancement and prosperity in education, employment, and social status, has also been found to be associated with sexual risk. So whereas previous literature has mainly focused on ethnographic qualitative approaches to understand this phenomenon, which of course we definitely need and has informed today's talk, in instances where there have been quantitative approaches to understand this phenomenon, they've almost never or rarely focused on African American girls, instead focusing on males, incarcerated youth, youth who have extreme or severe mental distress, et cetera. And a plethora of research in this area has also focused on violent consequences as a result of depressed outlook and hopelessness. So this current talk is going to focus on a quantitative approach to answering the research question, are young African American women who report indicators of poverty and hopelessness more likely to report behaviors and relationships that compromise their sexual health than those who do not report indicators of poverty and hopelessness? So specifically, this study assessed whether young women reporting a lack of food at home and or low perceived prospects for completing a high school diploma or obtaining a GED or low perceived prospects of obtaining a job were more likely to report a host of sexual risk behaviors. So participants were part of a larger CDC-funded study to evaluate the efficacy of the adapted young women's co-op intervention for African American females who reported being sexually active during the past 90 days, who were between the ages of 16 and 19, who also reported alcohol or drug use in the past 90 days, as well as reporting ever having dropped out of school or considered dropping out of school. This data was collected between May 2010 and October 2012 from inner city economically disadvantaged communities in both Wake and Durham County, which are located in North Carolina. So the structural determinants of health that are focused in this talk are both poverty and hopelessness, and we use proxy measures to indicate poverty, which was the lack of food at home and or ever having been homeless, and then proxy measures for hopelessness were low perceived prospects for obtaining a high school diploma or GED and or for attaining a job. Sexual risk behaviors that we looked at included having multiple sex partners in the past 30 and 90 days, reporting that your main sex partner was 3 or more years older than yourself, having a main partner involved in a gang, unprotected vaginal sex with the main partner, substance use while prior to or during sex, as well as exchange sex, which was defined as, have you ever had sex to receive money, drugs, clothes, food, transportation, a place to stay, or other things from a male other than a main sex partner? And I should also go up and mention that for hopelessness, individuals were asked, how likely is it that you will obtain a high school diploma or a GED someday, and how likely is it that you will obtain a job someday? And response options range from it will happen to it will not happen. Separate logistic regression analyses examine the association between each structural determinant of health and the host sexual risk behaviors while controlling for age. So it's not reported here, but the mean age was about 17 and a half years old, and as you can see, more than two-thirds were below grade level for their age. The majority of teens were actively seeking employment, and they also reported some major challenges to getting a job. Approximately one-fifth reported living in a household where individuals go without food, 27% reported ever having been homeless, and 19% reported low perceived future prospects for education and employment. Among those reporting a main male sex partner, 74% reported their main partner was involved in a gang, 73% reported unprotected sex with the main partner in the past 30 or 90 days, and 57% reported substance use prior to or during sex in the past 90 days. A small percentage, about 15%, reported exchange sex. So here at a snapshot, you can see the adjusted odds ratios for each of the structural determinants of health and their effect on sexual behavior, risk behavior. But let's take them one at a time, starting with lack of food at home. Okay? So for those young women reporting a lack of food at home, they were at increased risk of also reporting 2 or more sex partners in the past 30 and 90 days, a main sex partner who is 3 or more years older than themselves or who is involved in a gang, as well as substance use prior to sex in the past 30 or 90 days. Those young women reporting ever having been homeless were at increased risk of also reporting a main sex partner who is 3 or more years older than them, as well as having ever engaged in exchange sex. And then finally, those young women reporting low perceived future prospects for education and or employment, which were indicators of hopelessness, were at increased risk of reporting 2 or more sex partners in the past 30 and 90 days, substance use prior to or during sex in the past 30 and 90 days, and ever having engaged in exchange sex. Not reported here is that none of the structural determinants of health were found to predict unprotected vaginal sex with a partner in the past 30 or 90 days. So approximately half of the sample reported having ever been homeless, living in a household with insufficient food, and or low perceived prospects for education and or employment. The data indicate that lacking sufficient food at home, as well as lacking shelter, both were proxies for poverty, were associated with risky sexual practices that may be understood in this context as survival sex. Furthermore, those young women endorsing limited future prospects for obtaining education and or employment were at risk of also reporting multiple partners and exchange sex. So it's our contention that some young women may engage in risky sex as a way to gain power and protection in resource-poor communities. Some other ideas that have been put forward is that a sense of hopelessness among economically disadvantaged youth may incite them to abandon long-range planning for short-term attainment, so basically instant gratification. If you don't have hope that your future is bright, then you're more willing to engage in things that pleasure you currently, as well as, of course, doing things that you may need to do in order to survive your situation. Others argue that these youth do not see the benefit of being careful for themselves or others if the expectation of failure is likely. So, and now you can just see here some of the more prevalent risk behaviors included main partner involved in a gang, unprotected sex with the main partner in the past 90 days, and multiple partners in the past 90 days. So this is definitely a group of individuals who do require some intervention, but should we only focus that intervention at the individual level? So whereas previous literature would focus and often do focus at the individual, community, peer, group level approaches, we believe that because hopelessness may partially explain sexual risk in poor communities, structural level prevention approaches are probably more appropriate, or should at least come alongside individual level approaches. Keep in mind, to support that contention, structural level factors such as homelessness, socioeconomic status, and class have been found to adversely affect participation in those individual level risk reduction interventions, so all the more reason to include them. Before briefly touching on some implications of the study, did want to highlight some of the limitations, which of course include the cross-sectional nature of the study data, which limits causal inferences, as well as the retrospective nature of the data, and that this was a homogeneous sample, so we are limited in our generalizability to other groups. So just very quickly, because I'm sure my time is out, some short-term strategies that may be able to address social determinants of sexual health include incorporating job skills training into existing evidence-based interventions that we are aware of and believe are successful or help to ameliorate this sexual risk behavior among this group, as well as providing housing assistance for homeless or displaced persons, as well as food assistance, as well as implementing microfinance programs and substance use treatment programs. And then some long-term strategies that can address social determinants of sexual health include reducing poverty by increasing employment opportunities, improving educational opportunities, as well as providing for stable housing and access to health care. I can be reached here if you have questions that don't get answered today, and I thank you. Any questions?
This is not so much a question, but I'm from Houston, mm-hmm. Texas. I'm a DIS.
Yes.
And this is something that I've noticed, experienced on my own, the same case with her, that the high-risk behavior was more prominent among the African-American group, mm-hmm. which in my experience, it's not, it's across the board. Because I've dealt with being a DIS clinic in an urban area, mm-hmm. and right now I'm a liaison for a clinic in suburban area,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Where I dealt with people of all whites and Hispanics, mm-hmm. blacks, of course, educated people, doctors, lawyers, mm-hmm. and there was no difference in high risk behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've noticed also in interviewing a young African-American kid, young person, they may mention in their few years of sexual activity one or two partners. But when I interview someone in Hispanic or white area, there are a lot more partners, mm-hmm. than they've had. And when it comes to, let's say, around the age of 28, some of them will tell me, this is some of the whites or Hispanics, or I've had maybe 100, maybe 200 plus,
mm-hmm.
partners,
mm-hmm.
in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to figure out.
Mm-hmm. So excellent observation. Some of my research is also in intimate partner violence, particularly the intersection of intimate partner violence and HIV. And so just like with that area where you find that it seems like African Americans are at greater risk, for example, of being violent towards their partners, when you control for socioeconomic status, you find that there is no difference. And so I would argue that the same is true in these situations. And so you started talking about that when you're talking about suburban versus inner city. And so I think when we control for socioeconomic status, we probably would not see that there is as much of a difference or any difference between the two groups. So I definitely agree with that. The last part of your question, you were talking about numbers of partners. What was the...
Yeah, numbers of partners.
Mm-hmm. And what else did you say?
By the age of 28,
mm-hmm.
By the age of 28, the white respondent will have had, mm-hmm. 200 plus partners, mm-hmm. whereas with the black, maybe 50, mm-hmm. or 30. And that's, mm-hmm. that's what I call it. 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. And it's, that's the way it is. And also when it comes to drugs, with the blacks, it's just weed. Mm-hmm. But with the others, mm-hmm. you know, weed, crack, mm-hmm. cocaine, mm-hmm. meth,
So now, I probably won't be able to address all of what you just said, but I will say, because I mean, that's huge, but I will comment on just like, it's probably similar among adolescents as it is with the adult population, in that what is the one thing that black people are less likely to do or have access to that white people do, and that's access to health care. So whereas the same two different groups may engage at the same rate, or even one group may be more riskier than the other group. One group also has higher access to health care, and so if you're seen by a doctor and you get treated for your chlamydia or you get treated for your gonorrhea, you're less likely to then spread it within your sexual networks. And then you look at African American groups where they're less likely to have access to health care, less likely to trust the health care system. So then, and you're having sex within the same sexual networks, then you're more likely to increase the risk. On top of the fact that of all of the racial ethnic groups, African Americans are more or less least likely to date or have sex outside of their race. So their sexual network continues to be the same.